Committee will come to order. Good morning. This is, of course, the June 25th meeting of the Committee on Customer Service Operations and Safety. We're going to be taking things in slightly different order than the agenda in view of circumstances. In particular, we will be moving the safety and security report effectively up, although that will be a somewhat different discussion than it would have been. And we'll be doing that before other items. First, however, before we begin, I've been asked that we observe a moment of silence in view of the loss earlier this week. Thank you. As I said, we're going to make an adjustment to the agenda, so I'll ask for approval of the minutes in a moment, and then we will ask for a report on generally on safety and security, but obviously more specifically on the status of the ongoing investigation and the operational response to the continuing situation. And then we will proceed to the action item and the other information. If there is no objection, that will be the agenda. Hearing no objection, the agenda is approved as so modified. The minutes of the May 28th meeting were previously distributed. Does anyone have any questions or corrections or changes to those minutes? If not, I'll ask unanimous consent that they be accepted as presented. Hearing no objection, the minutes are accepted as presented. And that brings us to our first item. Good morning, Mr. Cato.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the board. This week, of course, has been one of great difficulties for this agency and for the people of this region. And first, I'd like to say how grateful I am for the outpouring of support from people around the country and around the world to provide assistance in us determining what was the cause of this accident and also for support and assistance to the victims of the accident. This tragic accident has had a profound effect on everyone in our region. This accident is weighing heavily in the hearts of everyone at Metro, yet I know it pales in comparison to the pain experienced by those who were killed and their families and the families of those who were injured. And I know it has brought great grief and worry to them. Yesterday, I reached out to all members of the families who were killed and to families of major injuries. I was able to contact them to give them our condolences and to offer whatever support that we could to help them through this time and this time of need and their grieving. Again, I'd like to thank the board for the action that they have taken to set aside funds to help individual families have need, and some of them did. In addition, we've been working with the various religious communities who have come out in support of the families, and I'd like to take note that the Interfaith Conference of Metro Washington is coordinating an interfaith prayer service to remember those victims of the Monday's tragic accident and to honor the first responders. Having said that, and having talked about the impacts of this accident, of course, this investigation is well underway. And it's been investigated by several groups. First, the National Transportation Safety Board, who have the lead responsibility. Working with them is the Metro staff, and we have an accident review committee that has been established to also try to determine the cause of the accident. We have been offered and we have accepted experts from around the country to come out to look at every aspect of our system, to ensure its integrity and to ensure the safety of the overall Metro system. At some points in time, there's been many comments made, and we have to be careful of this, concerns about the maintenance of the vehicles, concerns about what happened from the operator's perspective. And every report I have received and the entire investigation that has occurred thus far demonstrates that the operator did everything she was supposed to do in operating her vehicle safely. The preliminary investigation shows that her train was in the automatic train operation mode. It also shows that she did hit what's called the mushroom or the emergency brake to try to avoid the crash. My operator, in all indications, did everything beyond what was required of her. Having said that, the issue of the integrity of the 1,000 series cars had been brought up in many reports. There was a report that was issued in 2006 from the National Transportation Safety Board that looked at the crash worthiness of those vehicles. And basically, what I'm saying is it is a 1976 Brow vehicle, and if you want to make a comparison from an automobile standpoint of a 1976 car, they determine that the crash worthiness of that vehicle, it is not the same as a new vehicle that is currently manufactured, just like a 1976 automobile does not have the same crash worthiness of a 2008 vehicle. Having said that, they did not find any issues concerning the safety from the standpoint of the operations of those vehicles or the operational integrity of the vehicles. Even so, Metro has been working for the past few years due to the age of those vehicles to replace those cars, and we will continue to do so. Yesterday, we received, and the National Transportation Safety Board reported that they had some concerns based upon their testing of the signaling system in the area of the crash. There were six different aspects or cables that they tested. Five proved to be working to the specifications. One, they identified, quote, some anomalies in that particular line. As a result of that, I immediately ordered an emergency inspection of all 3,000 controls throughout the Metro system. Our employees today are conducting that investigation and those inspections. We will not operate the system in automatic train operation until we are 100% sure that every control unit is working perfectly. Again, this investigation is still underway, and we've not determined the cause. But we're not going to wait for a report to take an action. If there's any suspicions, if there's any hints of a problem within our system from the standpoint of this investigation, I have directed our staff to take whatever action is necessary to fix that, to test the system, to ensure, again, its integrity. But this investigation, again, is not concluded. I am confident that when the time comes that we determine the cause, we will do whatever we have to take, whatever we need to do. If it requires replacement of any items, I will take the emergency action necessary to do so. If it requires for us to operate differently, we will do so. So we will take whatever action is necessary. I've asked Mr. Francis, again, to give us some more specifics on what was detected yesterday and, again, what action we're taking on that.
Thank you. Mr. Francis.
Thank you, Ms. Cato. Just to piggyback on what Mr. Cato said about the track circuits, we have started, immediately started that Tuesday morning of checking and inspecting every track circuit that is on the Metro system. There's somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000 track circuits that we have to inspect. Right now, we have roughly about 10% of those track circuits inspected at the time. Doing such and cooperating as well with the NTSB for their investigation as well. Is it our hope to have all of these track circuits inspected in the next couple of weeks, if not sooner? As Mr. Cato pointed out, we will check every track circuit to ensure that it is operational, it is functioning, and before we put this system back in automatic train operation. Immediately after the accident, I directed the operational team to put the trains in manual mode, which we've been operating system-wide, with a 35-mile-an-hour speed restriction on the red line. On Monday, we were operating between Glenmont and Tacoma and Shady Grove in Brooklyn. The next day, we were operating between Glenmont and Silver Springs, Shady Grove and Brooklyn. This morning, we were able to operate our system from Shady Grove all the way to Glenmont, single tracking on track number one, which is the outbound track from Fort Totten to Tacoma. We will do that in the peak, we're doing that in the peak now. We'll also do that in the afternoon hours between 3 p.m. and 10 p.m. During the intermittent times, there will be further testing and inspection that goes on then. When the testing and inspection are done, then we will get together with the NTSB and then collaborate on what we need to do, and decisions will be made from that point on from our mode of operation. But again, the decisions will not be made until we Metro employees get our own internal certification on the system is inspected with the track circuits, and then we're able to make determination on direction on our mode of operation from there.
Can you back up a second just to make sure we understand? Right now, you're able to operate with one track through during peak times, basically.
That is correct.
So at this moment, for instance, you have one track that takes you all the way through the area, and so the red line is effectively running.
That's correct.
From end to end.
Yes.
But, again, can you give us the hours again at which you have to shut down again?
The hours that we're operating, single track operations from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. and from 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. During the hours of after from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., there will be some additional testing and investigations going on at that time, and after 10 p.m. at night.
And so in those periods, the track is again shut down, and you're turning back.
That's correct.
And we're running some kind of bridge?
It will be, yes. I should mention, too, that during this time, ever since Monday, we have been running shuttle service on the buses, on our bus system from various stations.
Where are you getting the buses to run the shuttle? I mean, have we got enough in spare?
The majority of the buses have came from us at Metro, but I do know, I believe on Monday we had assistance from the ride. I think we use a couple of buses from them, but the majority of it, as I'm aware, is coming from us.
So, but, I mean, are they buses in reserve? Are we impacting any of the existing bus lines?
It's my understanding we're not impacting the existing bus line, but I need to get the detailed information. We're using, we do have a contingency fleet, and we just received a large number of new vehicles, and the vehicles that they replace, we've put them back into service. Those vehicles are still operational and safe. We put those back in service, so we have some older vehicles out there, but we're able to operate the services with the spares, placement vehicles, and vehicles that we set aside for this type of.
Okay. So at the moment, there's no adverse impact on any.
Not that I'm aware of, Mr. Chairman. I'll be honest with you. I need to get more detail, but I'm not aware of that.
John?
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Victoria.
Yes, good morning. I know we are not adversely affecting the regular runs. We're using mostly our contingency fleet, and we have backed off on some of the repairs that need to be done so that we can put as many buses out as we can, and then we'll catch up on those repairs afterwards.
And you say repairs, you mean like long overhaul?
Small maintenance, minor maintenance, oil changes, tune-ups, things of that nature.
And you can stretch this for a while?
We should be able to stretch it for a week to 2 weeks if necessary.
Okay, well, that leads to my next question, which is, and I know you may not have concluded, but I wanted to get some kind of sense of what you know about the timing for this mode of operation. You were emphasizing that everything's going to be checked before you do anything different, and I understand all that, but do we have any sense of, you know, what the time frame is that you'll have to be operating on this limited basis with single tracking part of the time?
Not at this time, but we will stay in manual mode operation at this time until we gather all the information and make our determinations at a later date.
I was just speaking of the track availability. I mean, do you have any sense of when you're going to be able to get both tracks back?
No, we don't.
Not at this time. Once the, again, Dave Kubicek, Assistant General Manager over Rail,
At this time, whenever we conclude the test today, we will reconvene with the NTSB this evening, and we will review our test results and findings and such. We would like to say that we're optimistic that hopefully we do complete the testing either today or, you know, late tonight. But to be realistic, we'll continue to move forward with the plan that we have at this time.
So is the main question now testing so that your confidence in the safety of that track, or is it otherwise free, in other words, or is it still tied up for reasons of the investigation?
It's still part of the investigation process.
So it's going to be up to the NTSB when they give you permission to, and then you have to decide you're satisfied that it's okay, mm-hmm. but you're waiting on NTSB first.
That is correct. We have to complete the investigation, and based on the findings, and we would have to evaluate where we stand, and then we would be in a better position to understand when we could release the additional track.
Because you're going to need some time once they release it to you to
That's
have
correct.
It operational. And at this point, you can't say whether that's a day, a week, or a month. I mean,
yes. No, sir.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I understood. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that was the end of my update on the operation.
Mr. Chairman, also, while we are conducting the investigation and trying to determine the cause, we have also been actively pursuing capital funding or needs for funding for this agency. As you well know, because of the actions and discussions and directions you have given, this agency has a large capital need, $11.3 billion over the next 10 years, and the need to fund critical elements of this aging system to ensure that it's in a state of good repair. This morning I met with the Secretary of Transportation to discuss whatever help that he could offer. And with him was the Deputy Secretary, John Picari, as well as the Federal Transit Administrator. I requested whatever funding that the federal government had, whatever emergency funding that the Secretary of Transportation could provide to replace, to fix, to restore what's ever necessary on this system. His focus and his commitment is to this system and the safety and integrity of the system. And he has agreed that he will direct his staff to work with us, replace whatever is necessary to ensure that Metro is safe. And that we can provide the services to this region. He's working with the Congress, again, to look at the dedicated funding and to assist us in making it an appropriations, not just an authorization. In addition, we've been working with the local congressional leadership, both in the Senate and the House side, and they have been working very hard, and their staffs, to work again to determine and to hopefully speed up the process of making monies available to assist Metro with its capital needs. Again, I didn't walk away with a suitcase full of money, but I did walk away with a commitment from the Secretary, Secretary LaHood, to support us to have a safe operation.
I'll open it to questions at this time, Mr. Jingle.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that I rode the red line this morning, getting on at Tacoma and also getting off your Judiciary Square. And certainly we need to advise our riders. I know it's being done already. There will be delays because of that single tracking. But just my personal experience this morning, I got on the train at 8, and I got here at 8:35. So for me, it's about a 10-minute delay, and it looked like you were running on about 10-minute headways on the one single tracking. So just wanted to offer that as input to the other riders that you know, expect delays, and certainly hopefully it'll get resolved as soon as it could be. Thank you.
Mr. Benjamin.
I'd like to follow up on Mr. Giancola's comments. I also rode the red line in this morning, and actually I rode in the very last seat of the very last car of an 8-car train. And that last car was full, and the first car was full, and the whole train was full, because people are riding our system because they believe in us, and they believe in the fact that we are trying to maintain a safe system and that we are achieving that in every way we possibly can. So the ride did take a little bit longer because it takes longer to load and unload when you have fewer trains running, and there are 8 car trains. So my 27-minute ride actually took almost 50 minutes. But everybody was riding, and they were supporting us as an agency, and they were getting in the first and last cars.
I had a similar experience yesterday. I was in, as it turned out, the last car of it was an Orange Line train. It was also absolutely full. In fact, it was a good example of what they call Orange Crush in my part of the world. And it was also a 1,000 series car, incidentally. And I'd say this morning, similar experience, that people are definitely riding. June, of course, is typically our highest ridership month of the year, so the demands on the system are as greater than ever. Someone over here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I echo the same sentiment in terms of the challenges of the use of the service delivery, and also I think extend our thank you to the customers, because as you say, we need to remind them. But we were both on that Orange Crush, and I came in on that Orange Crush, and the atmosphere was cautious, but I think it was understanding. People were had their levity as they waited. I had a question, though, and that question was other actions that we're doing, and that was talking about what might we be doing in our operations of trying to reconfigure our trains, and the ability to do so, and some kind of assurance that there is the effort to try and think of come up with an operational change that will help, I think, take us over until we actually can do what we really need to do, and that is actually put in operation a replacement of vehicles.
If I may, yesterday in my discussions, I met with operators, rail operators at the division where this train came out of. They have some concerns, obviously. And their union have expressed that, and as a result of speculation on the part of various people, there is some perceptions about the cars. But as you know, the perceptions in the mind of people can be their reality. So as a result, we are working to reconfigure the cars, put the 1,000 series in the belly, so to speak, of the train sets. That will impact, to some degree, our communications, which Mr. Francis can talk about in a little bit more detail.
And if I can add, Mr. Kubitschek and I have been spending nights talking about different configurations on the system, and putting the 1,000 series cars in the bellies. We're looking to put the plan together as soon as possible. We're looking at things. Most of the 1,000 series cars are maintained on our red line system, so it's a matter of taking a look at them and trying to coordinate them within the system configuration. But we've came up with various options. We're going to continue. I think we have some pinned down. We're going to meet right after this meeting with our planning and operational personnel to make sure that takes place.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too would like to thank our customers. I think they've been phenomenal throughout this whole tragic episode. And in listening to the comments and the feedback that we've gotten, they've continued to ride the system. They've continued to recognize that WMATA is doing everything within its purview to try to address this situation. I've even seen interviews where they were asking for grades, you know, give us a report card on our responsiveness. And I think they've been tremendously understanding in this particular situation, so I too would like to thank them. The lowest grade that I saw during that particular interview was a B+, and I thought on up to A. And I think they have been wonderfully supportive of WMATA. And similarly, I think I'd like to commend our general manager, deputy general manager, and all of our WMATA staff. Everybody stepped up to the plate very quickly, very promptly, in an all-inclusive manner to try to address this, to reach out to the families, to check the circuits, as you said, to go into manual mode, to do so many different things simultaneously to address the situation, keep the system going, and I, for one, have been very proud of the way you've stepped up to keep the system going and to be as responsive as you, and proactive as you have been here.
Thank you, Ms. Hewlett, for those comments. And I think it's important to remember along those lines that this isn't something that's, you know, simply past tense now, because, of course, everything you're speaking of is ongoing, and that this is going to be a stress on all those working here at every level, both because the operations right now are more difficult under these circumstances, which means a lot of people are doing things, some things different than normal because they've had to adjust routines. You know, they have to perform at a different level right now simply because of that situation. And then, of course, we have a whole lot of people who are tied up and involved in various aspects of investigation. I understand, Mr. Francis, that you actually have people who now are, to some degree, I suppose, working for somebody else.
Pretty much. Mr. Kubitschek has been involved in the debriefing with the NTSB personnel since Monday evening. They have been interviewing our staff and gathering information ever since Tuesday morning. So, yes, probably half of the staff is working with the investigation, and the other staff is working hard internally, as we talked about evaluating our system and, you know, trying to come up with the answers and conclusions to us from an operational standpoint.
Thank you. It's just a good thing for us to keep in mind. Ms. McKay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, would like to add my comments and thank the customers. I experienced yesterday and today, I guess, what now I can call a yellow and a blue crush, because we have the same issues on the yellow and blue line on the orange line, and it's tremendous to see that our ridership is still robust. Going back to Supervisor Hudgens' question, I'm glad to hear, Mr. Francis, that consideration is being given to configurations. I do think that one thing we've learned is our customers have a increased tolerance and appreciation for delays that might occur as a result of this, and I think that tolerance level is high. We discussed earlier that there may be some on-time performance issues relative to configuration changes and that may be relatively minor in nature, and I think our customers are up to that challenge. One comment I heard from several people is even with some delays, this is still the fastest, safest, most efficient way for hundreds of thousands of people in this region to get to work. Furthermore, for some, it's the only way. So I think ensuring safety, even if that part is perception, I think will go a long way for our customers. And as the general manager and others have said, you know, perception for some is reality. And I think we need to focus on that reality, even if it means some minor inconvenience for our customers, because their tolerance level is high. Their respect and appreciation for the system is high. And I think they understand there may be things that have to be done as a result of this tragedy that may impact, you know, their daily commute. And I think our customers are with us if we have to do that. So thank you.
Do you want to proceed with your report?
Well, I would like to, again, just make one more comment, Mr. Chair. Many people and everyone in this region, as I have said, have been impacted by this accident. And I know there is an intense desire for information for answers. However, this accident is currently being investigated by the National Transportation Safety Board as well as Ramada staff. And I, again, caution people, do not take theory as facts. Let's get the facts of what's really happened. Just don't come up with what might have been and what might have done this. What might is not the answer. It will be the facts that will determine the cause of this accident, and we would take the necessary steps to fix that. The responsibility, again, of running a safe system is one that I take deeply. It is the number one commitment of this agency. It's one that I have always communicated since my first day here, and it is the focus that we will move forward in the future as we are doing today. We are committed to ensuring the safety of all of our customers and our employees. This system is safe. When you look at any other mode of transportation, public transportation is the safest system. We've had a tragedy in the past week. We will find out what caused that tragedy, and we will fix it.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Cato, I'm sure you have the support of every member of this board.
Mr. Chairman, I too agree that the NTSB has got to get on with this investigation, come up with the causes of this specific horrible tragedy. We have the job ahead of us of figuring out what there is from this that we need to know immediately in order to protect the system going forward. And so there is necessarily a relationship between the two, because we certainly don't want this repeated. And while NTSB is rightfully determining the cause of this particular collision, you know, Metro WMATA has a responsibility to glean from what we know sufficient information to make sure this doesn't happen again. And, you know, I hope that Mr. Kubitschek and others, Mr. Francis, are in touch with the NTSB as to their process. We're into this. This is Thursday. We're into this now 3 days, a little bit more than 3 days. And the daily headlines that are coming out of NTSB pronouncements, I'm used to people investigating things and investigating. You know, our homicide detectives don't go to the media and share theories and suppositions and possibilities. You know, our detectives go to the root of what's happening, figure it out, are completely silent, and then come back at an appropriate time and say, we're going to charge so-and-so. You know, this is the model, quite frankly, that I know best. And so a model that calls for a daily kind of release of possibilities on the causes is a model that I'm not familiar with. I have been on this board long enough, as have others, to know how this has happened in the past. And I hope that we can communicate to NTSB two things. Number one, we yield to them without qualification in terms of their responsibility to find the causes of this horrible, horrible collision. And number two, we want them to proceed as expeditiously as possible and directly as possible. And, you know, for those of us who have been reacting in the last few days at every turn of the road, so to speak, you know, there has been, I have to say, I have a growing concern as to just how the information is being handled. And I'm speaking only for myself in this regard. I have not conferred with the board on this issue, but as someone who has been very close to this, obviously, and, you know, as recently as yesterday, the disclosures or the quasi-disclosures that were made prompt me to make this comment today. So we want to be responsible vis-a-vis NTSB. We should be 100% cooperative, and we hope that they'll get this job done quickly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. I certainly, although we had not spoken about this, can say I associate myself with your remarks, which I think capture concerns that a number of us have at this point. We do have responsibility, as Mr. Graham correctly indicates, apart from the role that, of course, NTSB plays that we have to respect. We have a responsibility to this, to the people of this system and the employees who work here. And I would say generally, while everybody in this room has familiarity with the procedures, particularly from the federal side and something like this, out in the public, the presumption is that this agency is responsible. And, you know, we have to be mindful of that. As far as most of the public is concerned, we're responsible. WMATA is responsible for finding out what happened, why it happened, and doing whatever is necessary to ensure that it won't happen again. And so, you know, we have to proceed to carry out our duties, as you said. From this point forward, Mr. Cato, Ms. Francis, I'm planning to have on this committee's agenda when it meets a status report on the investigation and any operational responses that you find necessary. You've discussed today, obviously, what the situation is. That will change over time, and we will need to go over that and understand what it is that you're having to do in response to those things you learn, as Mr. Graham was referring to, that we understand that as soon as you know something that's relevant, you're going to take whatever action you have to take, and we certainly support you in that. We need to understand what that is and what's going on. So that's going to be a regular part of our work necessarily in coming months until this is resolved.
Let me add one point.
Mr. Gagnier.
I agree with you, Mr. Zimmerman, but I want to add one point. I think that we have people obviously very close to this investigation, and I think we need to put into place for all members of the board some kind of a daily communication, and then maybe after a little while, maybe a communication on a more infrequent basis, but a daily communication of what we are finding out about this, so that the board members are aware of this, and so we don't have what happened yesterday, for example, continue to happen. Are you willing to try to put together some kind of communication system along that line?
We'll put together whichever type of communications we can. We do want to, you have the responsibility to keep you informed. I would ask our staff to give me recommendations, and I will communicate that to you. I just want to get the one little bit of clarification. A lot of our people are very focused right now and working through the night to get the thing done. Our process will be we'll do it first and at the same time do the communications piece, but we take the action and be communicating it also at the same time. We will get it to you.
I just want to add to what Mr. Graham said and Mr. Zimmerman, that we are being responsive to the NTSB. As I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of our staff working closely with them. But as Mr. Cato mentioned earlier, we have a responsibility. I have a responsibility. We have an accident investigation team internally set up. And when I meet with the team and I think there needs to be an action taken, I'm going to take that action. As Ms. Hudgens said, and we heard the board, our customers, we're going to take a look at these 1,000 series cars. As I mentioned earlier, Mr. Kubitschek and I have spent wee hours looking at this, the configurations, the maintenance, the whole nine yards of it. And when we determine that it needs to be done, we're going to make the move to get it done, and we're going to look at it to doing it as soon as possible. So I just wanted to reiterate the fact that, Mr. Graham, we're going to do our due diligence with NTSB, but we are going to work extremely hard internally at Metro as well.
Very good. All right. We do have other elements of our safety report. Do you want to proceed to that?
Yes. Good morning. First, let me begin by extending my sincerest condolences to all of the persons and families, lost loved ones, and my thoughts are with those persons who were injured in this unfortunate accident. Today, I would like to walk you through the accident investigation process and how it works. When an accident occurs, severity is what really determines the level of involvement, whether the NTSB gets involved or not. And when they do become involved, they become the lead investigator. Clearly, the June 22nd incident warrants their involvement. To date, as have been mentioned previously, Metro is cooperating and working diligently with the NTSB to investigate this tragic event. With the NTSB as the lead investigators, Metro has provided them with subject matter experts to guide them through our internal process and provide them with whatever they need to conduct a thorough investigation so we can determine the root cause and any causal factors related to this incident. Let me be clear. The NTSB, they are taking the measurements and they are conducting all of the testing and tracks with our assistance. Currently, we have committees that have been established and they will be investigating and looking into such things as the history of the accident, documentation of the accident scene, rail gauge wear, crew performance training, and things of that nature. As Mr. Francis and Mr. Cato has also mentioned, simultaneously, part of our internal safety process, our standing operating procedure, is that we set up our own accident review team, which is currently underway. Some of the members are the same that are related to the NTSB investigation as well. Understanding that it is not uncommon for the NTSB to take up to a year or more to complete their investigation, with the hope and as we go through the findings and we find things, we will address them. You have my word. We will address them as we find any discrepancies or anything that needs to be addressed. And we will inform you as well as the public. Metro is a very proactive agency, and anything we can do to improve it, we will, and we will do that now. In closing, I'd like to acknowledge all the first responders, D.C. Fire and Police, the FBI, the American Red Cross, for their outstanding support, and personally, I would like to thank the continued dedication from all of our Metro employees. Thank you.
Before you move on, if you could just give me a kind of rough idea structurally in terms of an investigation like this. There are certain, I assume there are certain kind of broad categories that have to be investigated.
That's correct.
I mean, one that no one's talked about here, but just logically, is there something external involved, whether human-made or natural?
Right.
And then if it's not that, then there are a set of different possibilities. Can you, and I believe that the investigation is structured to parallel that, but you just kind of give us an idea of
I've gone through some of the outcomes of those committees. So, for example, we would have a human factors or human performance committee. We would also have performance of train operators. We'd look at operational service. We'd have mechanical. So the way the team is structured, it's divided into specific areas. So those teams solely focus on their area, and it's at the end where all of the information is compiled collaboratively. Specifically, when we talk about an accident and how things kind of evolved. At this incident, I'm sure it's been very obvious that the FBI was present. So we did work hand in hand with the security and our regional police department and the FBI. So
just in terms of the logical possibilities, if it isn't external, you have, human beings, operators.
Yes.
You have vehicles, and you have what's generally called wayside.
That's correct.
And sort of the problem has to be in one or some combination of those things?
That is correct. And through the investigation, we'll determine which combination, if any.
Okay. Any further questions? If not, we'll move on. Chief Taylor, is it you're a part of this?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, as indicated by our safety officer, would like to extend my condolences to the family members of both the ones that were killed and injured in this tragic event. I, too, would also like to echo the collaboration that we received from the local police, fire, and rescue, in addition to the federal agencies, the FBI, the Transportation Security Administration, is also on the scene. And I can tell you that incident command system worked flawlessly, that we did things the right way. And one group that also needs to be recognized are the hundreds of WMATA employees that were at the scene to assist and clean up and to offer any other assistance, and the Red Cross. We also would want to acknowledge that the Transit Police were one of the first responding units to the scene, and they assisted in the evacuation and the treating of the wounded. So I commend them for their outstanding accomplishments in this particular effort. What we have today is to talk about the Part 1 crimes and crime statistics that we previously talked about at each of these board meetings, and it covers the five-year trend, and it reports out on the Part 1 types of crimes, those crimes that are more serious. One of those trends that we recognize is that which is identified as robberies, and that is something that has been identified not just here at Metro, but throughout the Washington metropolitan area as one of those types of crimes that we're experiencing. That trend involves the unarmed snatching, that robbery that reflects the unarmed snatching of electronic devices from our passengers, whether that be on the rail trains, in the stations, or in some of the bus bay areas. And so these electronic devices include the cell phones, iPods, MP3 players. And in 2008, there were 581 robberies, and year-to-date, we have 330 of those today. But I would also like to share some of those initiatives that the Metro Transit Police has taken. Since May 4th, the Metro Transit Police saw the spike in the crimes of robbery snatches, and we instituted a temporary special unit to combat those robberies occurring on the Metro bus and in Metro Rail. This unit, which consists of 9 officers from patrol, special operations, and criminal investigation, along with one of our K-9 teams, work closely to address these crimes, and we put out decoy officers out there, and since May 4th, we've arrested 27 people for these types of crimes. Needless to say that many of the people that we arrested would have, had they not been apprehended, committed additional crimes. And so we are working diligently to continue that type of operations to get these people off the street that are preying on our patrons and in the system. We're also working to continue the high-intensity targeted enforcement operations, and that is looking again at our crime based upon the crime occurrence and deploying as many plainclothes uniform officers to work both bus and rail to address the problems. And we are working with media relations to do continuous outreach. We're making public announcements throughout the system on an hourly basis, alerting our passengers and employees that they should safeguard their devices, electronic devices, and things of that nature. We recently graduated yesterday from the Northern Virginia Police Academy 22 new recruits, and thanks to the actions of the board last June, those officers will be out after they complete their field training program, and that will be additional resources that we can use to combat this crime. And that's about it.
Thank you. And questions for the chief, Mr. Albert.
Yes. Chief, can you describe any kind of collaboration or intelligence sharing that occurs among between Metro Police and local jurisdictions?
Absolutely. We are part of the Joint Terrorism Task Force, which is sponsored by the FBI. We're also part of the Federal National Joint Terrorism Task Force. And we coordinate with the Transportation Security Administration on a daily basis, and we are obligated by regulations to report to them any type of crime that includes explosives, guns, things of that nature. So we have a very good working relationship with the jurisdictional police departments. We have a ongoing effort with Prince George's County, Mount Rainier Police, Hyattsville, at those stations in and around those areas. We work on a continuous basis, working with them to target crime that's committed on the Metro property. We also work with Montgomery County on an annual basis, 3 to 4 times a year, in recognizing 7-Eleven, for instance, that as they roll out protective measures, we also work with them on that.
Mr. Bender.
Chief Taborn, Mr. Giancola made a comment a while ago about the visibility of police officers. And I've made the same comment, and I'm sure almost every board member has heard from our various constituencies that there's the perception, at least, it may or may not be a reality, but a perception that we don't see as many police officers, particularly on trains, perhaps in stations, we never saw an awful lot of them on buses, but particularly on trains. And there's also the perception that we as an agency are not enforcing to the degree that we used to. The no eating and no drinking rules. Again, these are perceptions, not necessarily reality, but perceptions are particularly important when we're trying to make sure that our customers feel comfortable using our system. Is there anything that we can do, or do you want to take some time to think through the possibilities of increasing the visibility of the Metro Transit Police so that that perception has changed?
We recognize that perception. We also recognize the enormous system that we operate in. What we've done, we've eliminated the plainclothes details, even though we sort of target many of our outlying parking lots because we do have problems related to damage to vehicles and thefts of vehicles. But because we do understand and recognize that visibility, a uniform presence is important, we have stopped that deployment for them and put them in uniform. We've also had our administrative people who work in the office doing regular administrative actions detailed to the street on certain times during the day. We, with the addition of these 22 police officers, would go a long way, again, to increase the uniform presence. We've reached out to our outlining jurisdictional partners with the hopes that they, too, can aid in their presence in the stations and in riding on our buses. And so we're working diligently. We cover a lot of miles, and as you well know, and we have a lot of issues that we're faced with on a daily basis, in addition to that of concerns for terrorism. So we're working diligently to respond. We have juvenile issues which are prevalent, again, throughout the whole Washington metropolitan region, where we want not to have our juveniles in jeopardy because of some disagreements in schools. So we work with the school systems, we work with the Metropolitan Police Department, and we sort of diffuse any potential violent actions, and that is usually at the scenes of many of our transfer points for the buses, Tenley Town, Minnesota Avenue, places like that. So we're working diligently to address all of those concerns, but the presence of police officers in the system is one that is very important, and we're working diligently to make sure that we improve that as much as possible.
Mr. Benjamin, Mr. Chair, I might. In addition to what the chief has said, I've asked him to put together and do an analysis of the number of officers that we have today in comparison over the past 20 years. 20 years ago, the system was much smaller. We were carrying less than half customers we carry today. And what has been the increase in customers and service versus the number of police officers that we have? Some of the steps that he's taking will give us some more visibility, but there is a reality, too. We have grown tremendously over the past few years. And yet, from the standpoint of law enforcement, I would like to see the growth of that, or has that grown as fast? And I do not believe that it has. And we'd like to bring that report back to you.
Thank you. Mr. Benjamin, I did not address the last question that centered around the eating and drinking. The transit police, consistently, they're out there writing citations. One of the big violators in the District of Columbia are some of those juveniles. And the situation with the juveniles in the District of Columbia is that by law, we cannot issue them a criminal summons. So it's either a warning citation or a custodial arrest. And last year, we issued approximately 3,000 warning citations to juveniles within our system. And had we taken the other act of custodial arrest, one, it would have meant at least 2 to 3 hours that a police officer was taken off the street. We have been working with other transit systems across the country, meeting and discussing the same types of issues. Dallas has a situation where they have an agreement with the school systems that any conduct that is not in violation of the law that's committed on the transit property, they automatically are suspended from the school. And then if, in fact, they appear in the system again, there's a possibility that trespassing or unlawful act, unlawful entry actions will be taken against them. But we're looking at things that are being done across the country with transit properties that are facing the same types of problems dealing with juveniles.
This is an issue in Clue that I have to return to, but I gather the situation continues as it has been with a different, the law is governed by whatever jurisdiction you're in, and the law is different in the district than it is in Maryland or Virginia, where fines are possible, and we don't currently have that.
Absolutely. In Virginia, we can issue citations for fines for juveniles.
So you're not stuck with do nothing or arrest them.
Right, right. Not in Virginia.
Okay. Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that last comment, because I know in Virginia you do that. Going back to the comment about the visibility, I certainly understand putting folks back in uniform, getting them, you know, more on our trains, and I appreciate the 21 new officers. I think that will help a lot that we're graduating. I guess my only concern is I would hope that a long-term solution to visibility is in the works, because I am concerned a bit about taking the plainclothes officers, putting them in uniform, when we know statistically and we can look at these charts to see that vehicle crime still remains a very large portion of incidents in our system. And so I know we've made strides to improve that. I hope that if we've taken plainclothes officers out of those parking structures and put them on trains, that that is a temporary measure, and that we haven't lost sight of the amount of vehicle crime that is still occurring. And I put that in the context of the customer, of course, is paying more to park now than they've ever paid before. The notion that outside of metro stations, at regional shopping centers, at office developments, other parts of the region, we know that parking structures are always a problem and an opportunity area, and particularly at our end-of-the-line stations where most folks assume vehicles will be left for long periods of time. And so I do appreciate the visibility on the trains, but I also think part of the customer experience overall with Metro means we also have to protect their property in our parking garages, and I hope that that effort is not compromised in any way.
And we are looking at future grants with the Department of Homeland Security Transit Security Grant Programs that will identify additional cameras that can be smart technology, so it will alert us that if anyone is going through the aisles of the parking lot. So we're looking to seek additional funds from them as well.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gay. Thank you, Chief Tabor. I believe we should probably move on to our next item concluded with this. We do have an action item that we had brought back from after sending it back with other direction, which had to do with the Retail Services Administration Program. Mr. Cato, who will be presenting this?
Yes, Mrs. Bollingham is going to make that presentation.
And I'd ask to, you know, you briefly tell us basically what you did in response to the direction and how this has been modified, how your recommendations have done. Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Last month, the committee gave us very clear direction that we should come back with a request for proposals without including food in it, without a master a preference for any master licensee that would be open to all stations, not limited just to high-volume stations. There was a request for coordination with local jurisdictions and the inclusion of zoning information in the request for proposals. And so we have recrafted the request for proposals to reflect all of those. In addition, we're specifying that all types of retail structures will be considered, and we will be and we're anticipating that we'll be making multiple awards under this RFP. We discussed briefly the evaluation criteria for that, and we would proposing to emphasize one-third for revenue, one-third for the capabilities, and one-third for local small and local enterprises. We're anticipating issuing an RFP in July with proposals due in September, a briefing to the board on next steps and making awards throughout the fall, and commencing the coordination with local jurisdictions and doing the operational feasibility evaluations during the fall.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand. Suppose that I'm somebody who has an idea that I want to sell something in the system, you know. I've got a keychain business and I want to sell keychains, and I know there's a spot near a station near where I live. There's a spot that I think would be just fine. Under this, if the board approves this, would such a person be able to contact WMATA and make such an offer and have it considered as a possible?
Absolutely.
For a one-off, you know.
Are you saying outside of the framework of this RFP, or?
No, I'm asking you to tell me what this is. So, in other words, if I'm an individual and I've got an idea, something I want to try and offer for sale, and I got an idea where I'd like to do it, but mm-hmm. I've seen a place. I might be interested in others, but I know there's one.
They should submit the proposal.
Can I go to you and say, I would like to be able to sell my wares at this spot?
Absolutely. Considered. That's correct. We would.
And then you might negotiate with, depending on, obviously, all the determinations you've got.
Correct.
There would be some procedure for licensing such a person to use that
correct.
Space.
Correct.
And how would I find out if this is approved that, you know, is there a phone number I call? Is there a place I'll be directed to? You know, how do I go about it?
Let me get staff assistance for the advertising for that or notification. So, Mark,
so I'm asking both how I would know in the first instance and then if I know, you know, what the channel is.
Okay, so I'm asking Mark Meister, who's the acting director of our real estate program right now, to step up and address that question.
Yes.
Initially, we would amass all the responses to the RFP, and then that would not preclude responses outside of that venue as well. If somebody came in at a later date and that spot wasn't taken by somebody else, and we would certainly be open to that. So it's not just a one-time availability, if you will. We've got 86 stations, and we don't expect to get an initial response on all 86. So over time, hopefully, we'll start infilling some of the stations that were not initially proposed.
Okay, but if I'm interested now, this RFP is going to be issued. I should respond to this RFP.
Absolutely.
So the RFP is going to be widely disseminated?
Absolutely.
Over and the if net. Somebody calls in and says, I heard that you've got this thing, are they going to be directed to someone who will tell them how they...
We have a staff person dedicated to this, yes.
Okay.
And we'll make it available either through email, hard copy, any way that we can get it to these people.
Okay. Question, Mr. McKay.
Yeah, I appreciate the fact that we're now accepting these at all 86 stations. I guess what I don't see in this item is in the staff background, when proposals come in, how are we going to weigh the relative importance of these types of things at some stations and not others? I mean, we had a discussion at the last meeting about, you know, some of our stations are isolated islands, and there's no services available to customers at all. Others have restaurants, you know, vending stations, stores right outside the gates. And so I'm wondering how staff is going to weigh the stations when they come in and determine which ones we think are the best location.
Okay, so it's a good question. I think we're going to be looking at a combination of the quality of the proposals and the feasibility of the location. So if it comes into a location where we've already vetted it, that's a very straight shot. If it's a place where it's more complicated, obviously I think we would put that to the back of the queue. So I think we'll want to try and we'll try to evaluate and bring to the board first the items that were and just give greater priority to the ones where the concept works, the passenger volumes work, and the feasibility works. And as they get a little bit more complex and there's a little bit more things to figure out and to collaborate with local jurisdictions on, you know, we'll do them in that relatively that order.
So we are going to consider what's going on outside of our property, because I think everything you just mentioned pertains, and for good reason, to our property, but a consideration is going to be to the environment outside of our property.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. And so there'll be close coordination with jurisdictional representatives as well to assure that the concepts that are proposed to us are consistent with the overall station setting.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Gregg.
Yeah, I thank you very much for this work, and I know that this is solid progress for us, and I appreciate it. I'm a little concerned, though, that we've gone from one extreme to the other. You know, we've gone from what was a dozen stations to 86 stations, and I supported Mr. McKay in his comments at the last meeting. I continue to support him, and I know that this is a new area for us. Mr. Zimmerman and I and others have been very much involved in this issue at the board level. I just want to make sure that what we're doing here, if you forgive this terminology, is bite-sized. You know, that we're not taking on too much, and then the whole program, this whole pilot, gets kind of swamped by, you know, 86 different sets of proposals. And so at the risk of jostling your apple cart here, I think we should go back to take Mr. McKay's comment and forge that into a limited series of stations. And I recall a commitment which that you would consult with the board members. I don't remember any call, but you know, I have very definitely in the area of the district that I know best some ideas of how this is best done. And I think, Mr. Cato, I think we should go back to a phase. You know, can we have a phase one and a phase two and a phase 20 so that we're able to digest this?
Well, Mr. Chair, to respond to that, we all initially have it very open. And as we get proposals, we will look at exactly what you're talking about and through that process. Make some determination or recommendations to the board on how we limit that.
Question, Mr. Gregg?
But
yeah,
I'm
disagreeing with that approach.
Can I ask you a question?
I'm
make sure I understand.
Right.
I think I understand. Do I understand correctly? Your concern is if we try to do 86 at once, that's too much.
And we'll end up with
zero. So, but let me, the way I was reading this was not necessarily inconsistent with this, so we want to get clarification, but I understood this to be the solicitation was essentially open to any of the 86 stations. I didn't think that would mean they would try to do 86 stations.
That's correct.
I assumed that what they would do is see what they got, figure out how big a piece they could bite off, and initially proceed with that, essentially with the phases determined, as opposed to beforehand where we seem to be picking the spots. And we might not pick the spots the market would pick. But if you got solicitations for, you know, maybe 10 or 12, that might be enough to do. But they might not be the 10 or 12 we'd have picked in the first place. So that was the direction I thought it should move. But I don't disagree with your point that we only do so much at once.
Well, and may I respond to that?
Please.
Just not to go on and on. But keeping in mind that we mean this to have a small business focus, and I haven't had a chance to read, I hope that's now the focus of the program. Is that in the, because we've been all a little bit distracted.
That's actually a third of the evaluation criteria that's participation.
And you were, I think, still detained outside the room with my first question, which went right to that.
Okay, good, I'm sorry. The issue is, for me, when we ask small businesses to marshal this type of proposal, you know, it's an effort. And if we say we have 86 opportunities for small business and 86 different sites, then you're going to encourage a lot of people to apply, and the evaluation of that, putting it into place. I just would be much more comfortable if we took Mr. McKay's proposal, picked 20 sites or 15 sites that were in real need of these types of services, and then went out with that first, and then evaluated, and then went from there. And that's really, if there's a disagreement in my comment as related to the recommendation, it's that we shouldn't put out an RFP that says we have 86 available sites. We should limit the number, target it, and go from there. That's the point of view I'm expressing.
My response would be the same response back that the chair made. We can do that, but I'm not sure we're picking the 20 sites that the businesses want to do it at. That's the only concern. Our intent is not to do 86 sites at one time, but us sitting back here, we're not businesses, and we're not sure where they want to operate out of, and that would limit that, but I understand your concerns.
Mr. McKay?
Just a question for staff. Maybe another way to look at this, and I don't know if this is, would be the proper way or not, it's just a suggestion, is maybe we should limit the number of sites that one person or one business could apply for, because I like the idea of having them all out there, because I don't think we're ever going to do them all, but I also think that it's important to provide these types of amenities at stations where there are none, and I think we know where the stations are that where there are none, and I'd sure hate for proposals to come back at 20 stations where none of our stations that have no amenities are included in that list. And so I guess what I'm trying to figure out is there a way to ensure that the stations that are islands that have no amenities already can be prioritized very high within the 86? Mm-hmm. And is there a way to prevent somebody from coming in, a large business, coming in with 25 stations on their list, or 30 stations, or maybe 86 stations on their list, from dominating the entire marketplace under this proposal?
Oh, on the merchants?
And I think, again, our focus is on small business. I would recommend, if I could, that we limit it, but not just one, because it might be a small business that wishes to do two.
Absolutely.
I understand what you want to avoid, that a national firm comes in and bid on all 86, and you have Josephson's business doing that. And we can ensure that, we can make sure that's in the RFP. There's a way of doing that.
Do you have a motion, Mr. McKay?
I would move that we approve this item with the provision that you just mentioned that protects us from having somebody come in and take the lion's share of these away from small business opportunities, and that also in our weighting system, when these come in, we give fair consideration to the environment outside of our stations at these locations and how conducive it may or may not be today to having these services available to our customers.
And just to give you reassurance that I think our first step after getting proposals in under this would be to come back and brief you on the proposals that we had received, how many, what type, and to involve you in the prioritization of the review and awarding at that time.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mrs. Hudgens. There's now a motion before the committee.
What is the motion?
Restate the motion.
The motion is to approve this item with protections in the RFP that do not allow somebody to come in and apply for the lion's share of these sites, one entity, so that we make sure that small businesses are properly targeted and considered, and that weighting be given to the environment outside of the station and Metro WMATA property itself, and the provision of whether or not these services are available to customers in those stations as a major piece of criteria for the evaluation.
Okay, so it's the recommendation with two of those two qualifications you just made.
Right.
Discussion. Mr.
I'm prepared to support that motion if we can. The RFP itself will be submitted back to us so we can see it.
I think this is authority to initiate the RFP.
Yeah,
well, can we add to the motion that we'd like to see the RFP one more time, because I don't know how to define lion's share. And I don't know.
Do you wish to have it shared with members before it's issued? Or are you asking for the committee to come back and act again?
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing it.
If you want to hold this up another month, you can hold it.
Unless we can define more.
I personally would be comfortable delegating to the general manager some discretion over that. Or alternatively, we could pick a number.
People are averse to picking a number.
A not to exceed number.
What do you have in mind?
Are we talking about the number of the stations bid out, or the number of stations for which somebody?
He's not restricting the number of bid out. He's restricting the number anyone can take.
Yeah. The number of stations any one entity can come in on.
Of the 86.
Right.
I can choose one for you.
I don't have a number in mind.
Okay.
Ten.
No more than ten?
No more than ten.
I hopefully we can accomplish what we want with
okay,
that,
so
but it gives us a threshold.
Incorporate that
to
in the motion.
I'd like to just, are you finished with that? Yeah. I'd just like to make sure that, and I was looking for language I saw in reading before and I don't see it, but will you call out for me what was the DBE effort that we wanted to see? Mr. Graham has talked about the small business piece, but I thought we had something in the discussion before.
That language wouldn't have changed. We're still encouraging small local minority businesses to participate, and we had intended to handle that by making a weighting factor of 30% of the total score being
so
the qualification.
Okay, same scoring.
Yeah.
Mr. Cato.
Just for clarification purposes, sir, 10 what? I mean, am I sure?
And that motion hasn't been acted on, but there were 10 stations.
Yeah.
Did you mean 10 stations?
Yes.
10
stations.
No, 10 locations, which is not the same.
Because there's mezzanine.
So it's just one vendor per station. Is that true?
The suggestion is that no more than 10 stations per applicant of our 86 could be applied.
To an individual vendor.
Right.
To an individual vendor. I think that...
The only thing, well, part of the reason, I personally would be comfortable leaving the guidance to the manager and giving him some discretion at this point, because there are going to be issues where at one station you might have three or four locations potential, another one you'd have only one. So is it the station that matters or the location that matters? I'm not sure we'd want all five locations in one place that has five locations to be dominated by one person. Right. I'm not sure I mind if one person had one of those five and they had one at several other stations. And I don't know that we need to I think there were a number of really important points that board members made. Making sure that it is available to local entrepreneurs and not just some big outside firm is a big part of this. Making sure it's not dominated by one. All these things are important. I think we've given that guidance. So, you know, my own suggestion would be that we allow the general manager some discretion in going forward with the RFP, which I also understand to include, based on what he said, he's not going to sign something for 86 different stations either. He's going to see what he gets, and if we get a few, and remember the history on this is we haven't gotten lots of offers. So we're not afraid of being overwhelmed. I think we're afraid of maybe not having anything. But the general manager can limit the number, and I'm sure we'd come back for additional guidance if there were questions about it. That's my suggestion. Mr. Yule, you see? Sorry, Mr. Benjamin.
I like what you're saying, primarily because it's not clear to me, given the problems we faced before, what that number is. I don't know whether 10 is the right number, 15. I don't know whether there's a critical mass that somebody might need in order to provide a certain type of service. You know, the post office wanted to come in. You know, they want to do it for free. They might need 16. I don't know. So if we can have some flexibility, since we don't really know, and since we don't want to discourage others, but have the principle, which I think is a very important one, we don't want to have somebody dominate this, that we don't want to have, you know, one contractor come in and run the whole thing. and that we do want to have small business enterprise in it, I would feel more comfortable. I think that's what Mr. Zimmerman was saying.
It is a three-year contract, after all, so if we think you went a little too far in one way or the other, it's not that it's irreversible.
But I think the principle that Mr. McKay raised is a very important one.
Yeah. And that is in the motion. The original principle is in the motion. So the motion is still at the moment for the committee as Mr. McKay made it. Is there further discussion or desire to seek amendments? Or are you ready for the vote?
Ready for the vote.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. This will move forward to the board with a recommendation to approve. All right, that's our action item. We have one other item, which concerns something that is happening next week.
Oh, yes.
And that is a fairly significant step for this agency on the bus side of the operations. Mr. Cato, who's going to be talking to us now?
We have two different people who are making the presentation, Suzanne Peck, as well as Milo Victoria.
So the long-awaited deployment, of Next Bus is due next week.
It is.
Good morning, Ms. Victoria.
Good morning. And again, from the bus services, I would like to offer our deep felt condolences to the families as well. And I also want to thank our customers for their patience and confidence in us, and to the board for the continued support, and to the thousands of Metro personnel who, as always, have and will continue to step up to the plate and do whatever is necessary to get through any ordeal. So we want to talk about Next Bus, and just a little bit of history. In late 2006, it was originally launched as a pilot, and it was a pilot for about a year, and it was then paused. The decision to pause it was because Metro was not satisfied with the accuracy, the levels of accuracy, and the reliability. We realized that there was much work to be done, and so we decided to take approximately 19 months to go through the entire system and make it reliable. We knew that that was going to take a lot of work. It entailed the integration of several systems, repairs and upgrades of some of the equipment, and ensuring that processes were in place to make this work. On the next page, we have a vision. A vision is to increase the reliability of our bus system and encourage our customers to use this as a great alternative by using the service, which provides them with real-time predictions when their next bus will arrive. And the information will be available through several mediums. And I'd like to pass these around. As I speak, our customers are able to access the system three ways: through a website that can be accessed through the computer, their computers at home, or through a personal digital assistant or PDA; through any kind of a phone, whether it's from home or a cell phone. And also, we have several LED displays at several of the high-volume terminals. These LED displays also have sound. So the benefit to our customers is that they can use this tool to better time their arrival at their bus stop. If we go to the next page, I'm going to ask my dear colleague, Ms. Peck, to talk a little bit about the technical aspects and give a quick demonstration.
I was asked to explain this morning how the system works. The U.S. government's Navistar GPS system, shown over there on the left, transmits very precise radio signals to a GPS recorder receiver on the bus. That GPS radio receiver triangulates the satellites' locations, time, and velocity, and from that is built the bus location itself. The bus location is passed to an onboard computer on the bus, a mobile data terminal. That mobile data terminal passes the satellite's locational and the bus's locational signal to a radio transmitter also on the bus. That transmitter goes down, that transmitted information goes down to the left-hand corner to the bus operations control center, where a system whose name you know, OrbCAD, receives all the real-time location information on the 1,500 buses, and that real-time bus location information then goes through the internet to the center of the page to next bus's computer modeling prediction system. That prediction system takes things like the hour of the day of the week, the month of the year, the closeness of the stop, the traffic patterns, and does a computation, a predictional computation as to when the bus will arrive at the next stop and which next buses will arrive at that bus stop. And then over the internet, that information is passed from wireless cell towers to the variety of devices that Milo just spoke to you about. The predictions are passed to LED displays, to the Metro website, and over the public network to cell phones and to PDAs. As part of customer service, the bus customer service information system, we have deployed LED signs at four locations, at Pentagon where there are 16, at Anacostia where there are 12, at Friendship Heights where there are four, and at Arlington where there are six. And every place that there is an LED display, there is also an audio speaker for enunciating verbal information to accommodate customers who are unable to, who are visually impaired. And so the arrival information is available by web, is available by handheld internet devices, and in all cases by the passenger saying his bus stop, his or her bus stop or location. So if we may, let's give you just a very short single demonstration of the website information. We will first, because you may either, as you can see, one there, enter a stop, or two, select a route or direction, let us show you entering a stop. So we've chosen this morning to show you specific, of 12,000 stops, to show you specific stop 200140, which is the T2 route on River Road. And this is live right now, and it is showing you that on the T2 route on River Road, next bus, 20 minutes, 30 minutes after that is predicted to come another, and then in 110 minutes, a third bus. Sometimes, so that's if you want to enter a stop. If you want to enter a route, and we will enter this morning Route 54, and that is a route that runs north-south on 14th Street through Wards 1, 3, and 4. And the stop is where you are getting on, and the destination is where you are getting off, and the prediction is made based on the stop information. And so the next vehicle is for, and again, this is live, the next vehicles for Route 54, 14th Street are 25 minutes, then 15 minutes after that, then 13 minutes after that. And this particular example shows that where there are other routes serviced by the same stop, you also get the predictions for the other routes. So Route 52 intersects with 54, and you get the predictions for at that same stop for Route 52, 9 minutes, 23 minutes, and 43 minutes.
Does it work in Virginia, too? Show me a 23. Either one's fine, yeah.
And this is live data as we sit today. It's also possible to have a Google, which I know also, Mr. Zimmerman, you're interested in, to have a Google map of the route about which you are inquiring. And so let us put up the live Google map. We'll put up 54. And what you will see... Oh, okay. In real time, we will show you 23. And the stops are the red balls, and the route is the purple line.
Oh, and if you put your cursor over there, is that how you got the? How did you get that?
Yes.
Does it identify it?
Yeah.
It does. So that's the times at that time point.
That's right.
Okay, that is fairly impressive. This example, though, shows one issue for people. You had to ask me the 23A or the 23C.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to know when I'm at a stop is when the next bus is coming. So for a lot of people, it doesn't matter, you know, what it is. It's, you know, I'll take the A because within most of that range, it's the same route. So I care 23A, 23C. Do I have to look up? I have to separately look up all the routes at that site. I can't say I'm at this stop. That's what the number is. What are the next three buses coming?
It actually depends on the stop. If that same stop services other routes, it'll show that route that you asked for, and then the others that it services at that stop.
Okay, because that's in this format, we're just asking it a specific route at a specific site.
And correct.
I'm standing at the corner of, at this stop, which has its unique identifier, and I want to know what are the next three buses that are going to show up at this stop.
Right.
Can I get it to tell me that?
You can get it to tell you that if you say the stop.
If I identify the number of the stop.
If you identify the number of the stop, we could see it if we showed you...
Like we showed on the 54.
54 Road and Washington Boulevard right there, let's say.
Washington.
I'm trying to pick a spot in the middle of the route, actually. In fact, take Glebe Road and Pershing Drive. Come down to Glebe Road and Pershing Drive. So we get maximum. Towards the bottom of that, let's go down. Anywhere down there.
Yeah.
Okay, because there's a lot of overlap there. So. So that's telling me one bus. But what about the other buses that would be stopping there?
Well, we're not at the bottom of the page.
There's more to the screen graphic.
There you go. Those are other routes serving the same stop. You will get the route serving.
Oh, okay.
The
so
same
that, so
stop.
All right. So now
so you're
I
getting
know.
The 10B as well.
There's a 10B coming in 9 minutes and 17
yes.
minutes and 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. If there are three different routes,
yeah.
You'll get the next bus.
Okay, so I can infer there's no 23C coming, or it would have been up.
That's
there.
Correct.
Okay.
And it'll interleave.
Rush hour, I see a 23.
No, it'll interleave the time. So if. Yes.
Okay. That's pretty groovy.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Graham.
I just want to commend Suzanne Peck for her fine work on this. It's really very impressive. And everyone else who is. You know, the committee that I chair at the council has authorized $300,000 for FY10 for LED signs for the next bus at the most popular DC stops. So we're looking at 50 to 60 stops where there's actually going to be a sign such as what we in the district. I'm sorry. I'm unable to do this for Fairfax. But we're doing it for people from Fairfax.
Oh, thank you.
Because we will actually have LED signs. You're aware of this, of course. And what is this? What is the status of this adjunct? Because this is obviously a lot of people don't have cell phones. Believe it or not, we've got to remind ourselves a lot of people don't have cell phones.
They don't have internet connections on bus stops. And so what is the status of this authorization of funding?
We have been, as you can imagine, laser-focused at the perfection of the rollout for next Wednesday, July 1st. Immediately after the, and we give about a couple of weeks for everything, because the errors that are, whatever errors are pointed out to us on this, are going to be pointed out once. It's going to be, we have missed, of the 12,008 signs, we have missed a sign that will be repaired instantly, and people's observations about their routes will be repaired very quickly as well. Immediately past that, we will begin the LED work.
Could we, Mr. Chairman, may I request an update on this for the September meeting? Can we have that so that we can check in by September? I really appreciate the necessary focus that you have today, but if we could have an update on that in September.
And I'm interested as well in the kind of question, because enhancing this system over time is something we're all going to want. There are some of these going into effect, of course, next week at a few key stations that were always part of this. We also have some where the ones that Arlington paid for some years ago now, will they be plugged into this?
Arlington has six at the rail mezzanines.
Well, I'm actually thinking of the ones at bus stops on the 38B.
Oh, I would have to check on that.
Okay, so we can look into that.
Are they what?
Yes.
Six are going to be active in Arlington on the 38B line.
Okay.
They're typically placed outside metro rail stops.
Well, it's 38B runs along Metro Rail stuff, so yeah. But they're the ones we put in when we first had the Next Bus experiment that we paid for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, whatever it is now. And those things are still there. And of course, they haven't had any information but the time since then, but it'd be nice to see them working again.
They are working. They are working.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, we will come back to September. A few other questions over Mr. Giancola and Mr. McCullough.
Yeah, I want to just make a comment, and part of it's a question, I suppose. First of all, this is really neat. And I applaud the staff for finally reaching this point. But so much has been achieved, yet how far do we go with this? You know, I would love to see in the future that if, in fact, a bus is full, there's an operator that can make a decision and report back to the control center, I'm full. You know, maybe we should put that little notice as a little thing, bus full, be arriving in 5 minutes, but it's full now. So I would look to the next step, not just this point.
That's an excellent suggestion. That's very good information.
I declare to Groovy, Mr. Giancola disagrees. He says really neat.
Well, I actually said that to Tony before he said it, because I would never be
really neat. One for Groovy.
I would never be
younger.
I would never be late for a metro meeting if I knew the buses were going to pass me by and not stop. So I would love to see in the future that type of technology. Of course, the difficulty is you don't know if someone in the bus needs to get out. And so there is that will have to be overcome. But it is an interesting point. My question actually relates to the system that we have in place in the rail right now that tells you upcoming trains and the technology of that compared to the technology of this. And the reason I ask the question is I will periodically see, instead of yellow 6 to Huntington, train. And it won't tell you how many cars there are, and it won't tell you what color it is. All it tells you is there's a train coming in 2 minutes or 4 minutes or 6 minutes. And so I'm wanting to understand what happens when that occurs from technology standpoint, and how does the technology of that system in the rail compare to this technology for the buses? Because I'm trying to get at the long-term reliability of it.
Both are based on wireless technology, both are based on computer modeling, and both are based on text transmission and reception systems. So both have absolutely the capacity to have equivalent reliability, to have equivalent technology, and I would say from my perspective, it is simply the focus that we have had on these technologies, and we have necessarily had the focus sequentially, and we can certainly turn to the rail technology and have a similar technology. But this has been 2 years of focus, not only on the technologies, in the case of bus, not only on just the prediction technology, but the health of the whole bus system. The buses themselves had to have installed technology, MDT, GPS antenna, radio antenna, had to have all of that technology installed, current, working, healthy, before the fairly complex computer systems could be installed and work off of them. And they have those onboard technologies have to be very, very reliable as well.
So, but what happens in the rail when the sign says train and it gives you no other information? Is that a miscommunication in the wireless system, or what occurs that says we don't know what color it is and we don't know how many cars it is?
Probabilistically, it is that there are have not been either sufficient transmissions or any transmissions of data in a certain time period wirelessly. That can be from anything from there isn't line of sight, and line of sight is required, to batteries are failing, and so you begin to get fewer, in certain equipment is failing, so you begin to get fewer transmissions to the unit in the train or in the wireless tower not being reliable enough.
Just one follow-up then. With this system for the buses, are you expecting that that will not occur at the frequency it occurs on the trains, or is it still going to happen on these periodically where it won't know, you know, it may not catch a bus, or if it does, it may not catch the proper route number, or may just say bus and not a route number?
The reporting, when everything is going well, which it, we have pledged 90% accuracy with this information, when everything is going well, the satellites are actually running through this entire sequence and producing data every 60 seconds. When we are getting prediction information every 60 seconds, the predictions are spot on, are literally generally to the minute. As there begin to be problems, even if we get only 20 predictions every minute, if we get them every 3 minutes, if they fail two times out of three, we still get very good predictions. When we get down to six predictions a minute, less than that, the predictions start to, the bell curve starts to go out on the bell curve as to what we get in terms of a prediction. So what's necessary in terms of the buses is exactly what's necessary in terms of the rail. That is that you keep the equipment in good condition, in refreshed condition, in state-of-the-art condition, so that it does what it's supposed to do. It is when equipment ages, it is when equipment isn't on regular preventive maintenance, it is when it isn't maintained that that's downward spiral begins.
Thank you. We have a report also from the Riders Advisory Council. I believe Ms. Zinkel is here, which, of course, has been working on this for the last couple of months. If you want to come to the lectern. Yeah, sure. And so we'll hear a little bit about their reactions. They have been involved in the testing process throughout this period, the last month or so. Good morning. Thank you for coming.
Time's the charm. Thank you very much, Mr. Zimmerman, for inviting me here today. As the board is aware, and the authority is aware, in March of 2009, the RAC had requested that, in light of the public launch of NextBus on July 1st of this year, that the authority engage in offering a beta test to some selected group of riders to ensure the quality of Next, help ensure the quality of Next Bus data. We offered ourselves as a test group, and the board and the authority very graciously accepted that offer. For the past several months, selected RAC and AAC members who use the bus system have been engaged in a pilot test of NextBus, and we have been providing feedback on that service through our RAC staff person, John Pasek. As I reported, the beta test of the website was initiated in early May, and the beta test of the interactive voice response system was initiated later that month, shortly after Memorial Day. Specific issues that beta test members have identified include that in several instances we found ourselves on buses that NextBus wasn't aware of. So, you know, sometimes when you were seeing that, you know, there was a gap in service, it wasn't an actual gap, it was the result of a bus not showing up on the system, and this led to the maintenance blitz that Suzanne Peck discussed with us just a few minutes ago. In addition, we have also identified a few stops in the system where the numbers don't seem to mesh with the information on NextBus, and the authority has been working to correct those on a case-by-case basis. We imagine there will be more of that once the launch is public, as our beta test group was small and did not encompass the entire bus system, of course. In addition, Metro staff provided a viewing and feedback session for the actual NextBus web portal that riders will see when the service is launched on July 1st. Participants made a number of suggestions at that session, mostly having to do with cross-linking the information available through NextBus and traditional scheduling information available in other places on the website. As I understand it, putting that in place is a work in progress, and I defer to the staff as the timing of that, but we look forward to that. I think it will be yet another way that this type of information can be helpful to our riders. And lastly, we look forward to receiving copies of the frequently asked questions, which IT and communications staff are working together to draft. We hope that through input from the RAC and the beta test group that we can help maybe get through the first level of feedback on FAQs on the system so that the information presented to the public next Wednesday will be as clear as possible. Having said that, I think we all acknowledge that this is a big system. This is groundbreaking to have a system like this in place in a public transit authority of this size. I think everyone's anticipating that there will be, you know, a few things. There will be feedback from the general public, and I think based on our experiences of the past several months, we're confident that authority staff will be well placed to incorporate that feedback and make sure that NextBus is a system that grows and our riders can have a lot of confidence in.
You were part of the test.
Yes, I was part of the test.
And your general feeling was it was pretty good?
I tested the website on my home computer, my office computer, my personal PDA. I also tested the IVR line on my work phone, my home landline, and my cell phone. I found that it worked well on all systems. I used the IVR line, both talking into it. It seems to have been able, for the most part, to get past my Midwest accent. And and I also used it, you can also input your stop number using your keypad. I didn't have any particular technical issues. Mostly my experience was that on a couple of occasions I was on a bus that NextBus didn't think existed. And there were a couple of the physical signs that the stop number indicated did not match with the NextBus information, and as I understand it, the staff are working on rectifying those issues.
So apart from a couple of glitches, though, you found it useful?
Oh, yes, it's very useful. I think all of our users, or all of our beta testers found it very useful, and one member, Carl Seip, has said it's really been helpful in terms of convincing his friends who aren't regular bus riders to use the bus, knowing that they know when to go out to the stop, they know how long they're going to wait. So I think that it's something that can help promote bus use amongst individuals who may not be regular bus riders and may not have as much understanding of the bus system.
Very good point. Thank you very much for your work and those of others on the council who helps us.
Well, and I think I can safely say on behalf of the entire RIC, we appreciate the support of the board and the authority on this project.
Questions for Ms. Zinkel?
Just a quick question to Ms. Zinkel or the staff. That did we have members that were part of the testing that were from the disability community?
Yes. Our Patrick Sheehan, who is the chair of the AAC and a member of the RAC, was a participant. And there was another member of the AAC who also participated. Patrick was in an excellent position to provide a lot of feedback, particularly given that he has a visual disability, and he has worked with the IT staff to ensure that particularly the website has the characteristics it needs in order to be read by the technologies that the visually disabled use to navigate the web.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Engel.
Mr. Zimmerman, could I, Diana, accuse me to make one a point, if I may, and that is a point of size.
No, I was going to ask you that, actually.
Yes. There are actually three other municipalities with a forthcoming who have these prediction systems, but let me give you some sense of size. On next Wednesday, we will have 12,008 bus stops linked. Currently, Fairfax City's queue has 8 vehicles on NextBus. Arlington County's ART has 30 vehicles on a system called Connections. Prince George's County has the bus, has 25 routes on NextBus, and Montgomery County's Ride-On anticipates that in December they will have 80 routes. So to date, the comparison is 8 vehicles, 30 vehicles, or 25 routes compared to 12,008 stops of next Wednesday.
Exactly.
So it is something of.
I was going to ask you, how many systems in the country with 1,000 buses or more have done this?
I do not know of any who have done it.
I'm not aware of any either, but there may be. But I, you know, if you're listening around or talking to counterparts, it'd be interesting to know. I wonder if there's any bus system in the country this large that has done this.
I will check. I'm not aware of any. Yeah.
All right. Well, it's all very exciting. I also like this piece of information is useful, including the handy tear-off card where you can put in your, because that was one of the things for me is you got to remember this 6-digit number or 7-digit number, whatever it is. But with this little card, you can write down your most important stops and keep it with you. Old-fashioned technology to help you out with new technology. Anything further? We're going to pass by. Everyone has received the operations performance report and can ask questions directly of staff if you need to. We'll pass it by in view of the time. I believe that concludes the work of the committee for today. We have board meeting. Mr. Chairman, in how many minutes?
Immediately.
Right now, in the next room. We're adjourned.